You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media.
It's like, I always love it when you wear that hat.
Oh, yeah.
It's my favorite hat.
This is I got this in Whitefish.
In Whitefish, yep.
On a gravel adventure.
It's got the poppies on it.
Yeah. So. I do love it. And also my hair is really gray right now. I'm trying to decide if I'm gonna let it go.
Oh man, I would let it go, but that's because I don't get to have gray hair. So
I know. And you have blonde hair and it's
a whole different story. It is. So I get it. Brown. But my sister has the most beautiful silver hair and I'm always so envious and it's been like that. But anyway, no, I get it. So I'm like,
I almost
let
did
it go.
During the pandemic and I regret
not doing it then.
It's like people that color their hair will understand this, but it's not it's going really quickly now. Yeah. And I use something natural. I don't like to use a lot of chemicals.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's exciting stuff. So speaking of gravel adventures, hopefully you're going to be able to come too, but we're taking a gravel adventure to Ketchum, Idaho this summer.
It's going to be amazing.
There's a big group of us that planning on going, and then we ended up deciding not to do the gravel festival this year for multiple reasons. And we were like, hey, let's just all meet up in Ketchum. So anybody that wants to go to Ketchum, Idaho for Rebecca's Private Idaho Labor Day weekend, we're going to do a lot of meetup things and maybe even have a few things in the works for that event. And I have a discount code.
Yay.
It's going to save you 20% off registration. It will be in the show notes because it's kind of a little bit funky. But check the show notes. Come out and join us. If it's a bucket list event you've always wanted to go to, like there will be a whole group of us out there. I'll be out there for a whole week. And we have bad dogs going on right now.
I know, we
between
do.
Me and you, it's like they're ready to go.
But yes, come join us. And you get to hear specifically from Rebecca Rush today. So it's exciting.
All right, we're going to go because the dogs are going crazy and we'll get on our interview with Rebecca Rush.
Hey all, it's your editor, Lindsay here. I want you to get ready to ante up for the Ultimate Gravel Challenge this summer. Join us at the 2024 Trans Rockies Gravel Royale, where adventure awaits in the breathtaking Canadian Rockies. Experience the thrill of a unique 3-day stage race surrounded by stunning scenery on secluded gravel roads in the British Columbia backcountry. With two distance options, the full pint or half pint distances, there's a challenge for every level of rider. And forget about logistics, Trans Rockies has you covered. Fully supported with tents, meals, aid stations, technical support, and even massage services, so all you have to do is focus on the ride. You'll stay at the picturesque Nipica Mountain Resort, nestled in the heart of the Rockies, and celebrate your achievements with daily podium awards, group dinner, and custom designed memorabilia. After the ride, you can unwind at Chillville with cold refreshments, music, games, and camaraderie with your fellow riders. Don't miss out on this epic adventure. Register now at transrockiesgravelroyale.com and use the code GGG24GR100 to save $100 off your entry. The link and discount codes will be in the show notes of this episode. Embrace the challenge, conquer the gravel, and create memories that will last a lifetime. So go all in with us for Trans Rockies Gravel Royale this August.
Are you starting?
You're starting. All right. We are really excited about today's guest.
Super excited.
I would say it's somebody that's been an inspiration to me in gravel cycling from the very beginning.
I would say this is somebody that changed the trajectory of my life. So yeah, pretty exciting.
Well, we have Rebecca Rush joining us. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Oh, I've been waiting for this for a while. I'm really excited. Thank you.
It's pretty special.
Yeah. Okay. You have a long history in sports, all kinds of sports, and quite adventurous things, but we want to hear kind of What led you to the bike? How did that happen? I said earlier when, before we started recording, that could be the whole podcast, maybe. But there is a book if people want to
Yes.
read the whole story. So.
Yeah, it's in, so I got into cycling, and most people don't know this who maybe come into my world sort of in the in the last 10 or 15 years. I started cycling at age 38, really, professionally. And before that, I was a rock climber, runner. I've always been an athlete, adventure racer. And so athletics have been a part of my life since high school. And the bike, you know, I did adventure racing, which was a multi-sport, multi-team sort of traveling around the world, doing big expeditions that are like 7 and 10 days. And there was cycling in that, but I was so bad. It was my worst discipline. It was only like part of this sort of event that I had to do, and I was terrible at it. And but all the other things, running, paddling, adventure sports were in my wheelhouse. And I found cycling at 38, really after a friend of mine died in one of the adventure races I was in, was killed by rock fall. And there was a big sort of questioning of, why am I doing this? You know, I don't do sports to risk my life. I do sports to elevate my life. And so there was a real like soul searching at that point. And at the same time, we lost as a team our title sponsor. And I was kind of like, okay, now I have to get a real job. And I've been an athlete, a professional athlete for 10 years at that point, and managing a team and, you know, dealing with the finances, getting all the sponsors. And so it was a real eye opener. And really what happened, and I love this story, is a few girlfriends from Idaho were like, this was October, and they're like, just come to Moab with us. Let's do a 24-hour team. And I live in Ketchum, Idaho. They're like, we'll call it Ketchum if you can, and we'll just ride our bikes in the desert. It'll be amazing. And it was three other girlfriends. And I was like, I'm lousy at riding a bike, but okay, I'll come. And we just went to the desert and just had this like ride and rode around in circles, you know, for 24 hours. And our team, you know, won the amateur division, and I ended up having the fastest lap times of any female on the course. But given I was running all the technical sections, I was so bad. I just like shoulder my bike, I'd get off, I'd run, and I just like, you know, and it was what I needed to just fuel my competitive spirit and like get some demons out and but spend time with girlfriends in the desert, just riding bikes. And that launched a bike career. You know, my now husband Greg, he was our support crew, and he's like, maybe you should do 24-hour solo racing. And I'm like, I can't ride a bike. He's like, yeah, but you could do all the other stuff, because 24 hours was short for me. The races I've been doing were 7 days long. And so the next race I did, he helped me, and he was already doing the sport, and he said, I'll crew for you. I'll, you know, ride the sections with you. I was like, okay. And the second race I did, I actually beat the whole field, including the men. And it was just like, so I went to my remaining sponsors. I'm like, well, maybe I'll be a bike racer now. And they're like, okay. And honestly, it was ridiculous. The first article, so the third race I did was national championships, and I won that 24-hour nationals. And it was sort of like, partially I was good at going long. There weren't a lot of women involved, which I'm happy to see that's changed, you know. And I was used to riding all night. Like that wasn't a problem to stay up or learn how to fuel myself or any of those other things. So I definitely couldn't technically ride a bike, but I could do all the other stuff. And so, I mean, I tell that story because, and the first article that was written about me, my fourth race was World Championships, and I got second. And then there's an article written about me called Winning Ugly. So it's like, I get the first like media I get as a cyclist is basically saying how terrible I am at riding a bike, how technically bad I am. And I'm like, how is she winning races? Because it looks really ugly, was pretty much what they said. And it's true, technically wasn't a great rider, but I had the other stuff. And I tell that story, one, because I started late. I started at age 38, and that launched a more successful athletic career than I had before. And I couldn't do the thing that I was being a professional athlete at. Technically was not good at it, but was good at other things. And so I liked it. And third, I found the sport through women just being like, come ride with me, you know? So all those things put together really launched this whole second half of my career that's been longer and more successful and more amazing than the first part of my professional athlete career. So that was a long story of getting into cycling, but it really leads to the fact of, and I've done a lot of races and a lot of events and a lot of exploration, but I'm always about inviting people to come. It's why I launched Private Idaho. It's what the Be Good Foundation is about. It's what a lot of my work is about, is actually inviting people and especially women to the party, because most of the sports I've done, I was often the only female. Rock climbing, you know, adventure racing, it's teams of four with one woman, you know. Well, they have to be co-ed teams. And so usually most teams did one women, three man. We flipped that switch and had three women, one man teams. I've done women's 24-hour mountain bike teams, all because I want to show women that sport is such that anyone could do it, first of all, and that sport is our practice field for life. There is no other thing I've found where you can practice resilience, you can practice fear, you can build your community, you can, you know, set goals. There's no other playing field to practice life. And so that's really what sport is for me, in a lot of ways. And so that was only one question that you just asked. I know, but a long answer. Yeah, and how I found cycling. And I still do all the other sports, and people will say, well, why cycling? And what I really love about the bike is, one, it's a worldwide accepted tool. You know, you can go to Laos, Vietnam, Africa, you can go anywhere, and people understand a bike as transportation, as a journey, as you're going somewhere. And I love how far you can go on a bike. You know, you can't go that far on foot, or paddling, you're limited to a river. And the bike is just such a beautiful tool, for mobility and for moving around in such a great space.
What else are we going to talk about?
I know, like,
Alrighty then.
that's the podcast. I'm just kidding.
Christy isn't often without words. Come on, Christy. But we have a really cool shared history that, you know, would be great to touch on, and I'm honored that I've been an inspiration for both of you. And Christy said that I changed her life. Well, Unbound changed my life, and you changed my life as well. And you know, I was a mountain bike racer, you know, 24-hour mountain bike racer, and 2012 I was actually forced to go to this gravel thing in the middle of nowhere in Kansas, forced by a sponsor to go do this race, Unbound. And the distance wasn't at all scary to me. I'm like, okay, 12 hours, no big deal. Like, but I was honestly thought it was going to be death by boredom of, because I don't road race. I don't like road racing. I don't want anything to do with road racing. And, you know, I sort of had this attitude, and nobody knew what gravel was at that, or I didn't really know what gravel was at that point, and I thought it was going to be like a road race. And so I had to go because I was forced to go, and it was 2012, and it was amazing. I was basically taken care of and shepherded in by Dan Hughes, who's fellow gravel cycling Hall of Famer, which Christy is as well. But Dan kind of took care of me. He was like, here's how this goes, here's how it works. And I ended up winning the race. I was third overall, just a couple minutes behind the top two men, and was just like, one, whoa, gravel cycling's really fun. It was really a combination for me. It was a lot more mountain biking than I thought it was going to be, in just the texture of the road, and I loved the long distance of it. But and I was also one of the only people, I was one of the first people to come to gravel racing with a truly like professional attitude of, I had a coach, I was a professional athlete, I had, like, you know, crew that Dan helped me set up, and it was like I treated it like a race. I wasn't there to see if I could complete the 200 miles. I wanted to win the whole thing overall, you know, and I nearly did it. So I was one of the first people to treat gravel as a professional sport. And so I won a bunch of races early on because of that. And again, there weren't a lot of women, there wasn't a lot of awareness. But it changed my life because it opened a whole new part of riding for me. I mean, I live in Idaho and I've lived here for decades, and all of a sudden there was this whole new terrain opened up to me in my hometown where I was like, oh, I could connect this trail and that trail and that trail. And I ended up launching Rebecca's Private Idaho. One, I changed my cycling and had more places to ride in the off season and in the shoulder season when it's muddy. So I got to ride more and explore more in my hometown. And so I launched the event based on what I learned at Unbound and was like, wow, people would really like to see this terrain out here because I'm pretty stoked on this terrain. I'd never ridden in these places. So I came home and was just like, this is cool. I always thought I'd host a mountain bike event, but I'm going to do a gravel event. And I called some friends, and Christy was one of them. I'm like, do you think people would come? Should I do this? And everyone's like, yeah, do it, do it, do it. That was 12 years ago. And we launched Rebecca's Private Idaho really because of the inspiration I found going out to Kansas and riding Unbound and seeing the possibilities. And the reason I didn't do a mountain bike event and I wanted to do a gravel event because it was so clear to me that I could invite more people. You know, mountain bike single track trail, you know, one, you impact the community a lot and you can only fit so many people. And I was like, and it's intimidating. Not everyone knows how to ride a mountain bike, has a mountain bike. I'm like, people could ride anything they want on these roads and everyone can come. So that was the motivation of launching Rebecca's Private Idaho and making it, yes, I invite elite athletes, but really just wanted everyone to be able to be on the same, you know, playing field. And that was 12 years ago.
That's
Yeah. So,
crazy.
Christy, you played a big role in that, and you came to the first one and really helped me and helped launch it and provided the support and came into the Be Good Foundation, which, you know, as a founding board member. So I can look back not just at the athletic career, but, you know, my entrepreneurial career and be like, oh yeah, there were women along the way and supportive men, but women along the way are like, yeah, you can do this. I'll help you. And you are one of those people, Christy. It's
Well,
been
I appreciate that.
amazing.
I mean that like the invitation for folks that don't know it, when I was one of the initial MTB Lao participants, I think my nickname on that was Crash Test Christy, because I crashed so many times. But that invitation, I think it just kind of speaks to exactly what you're talking about, where I was not a mountain biker, and that was, I didn't even have a mountain bike. And you know, when Rebecca Rush invites you to something like that, my first inclination was, I can't do this. That's crazy. There's no way I can go ride trail over in Laos. But I had some other stuff happening in my personal life and was just like, I'm gonna do it. You know, I unfortunately broke my wrist on the second day, not the first day, but the second day. And it was really, really hard for me personally, but also just really gave me an opportunity that I seized, because you know, you presented that opportunity in front of me, and it made me decide to do more with gravel cycling and getting women on bikes, for sure. And you know, that we launched 200 women 200 miles while we were over there. And I came back to that getting ready to go into the what all of the guys on the team thought was going to take 3 years to see it take 3 hours. And it's just like, you know, when I think when you get women that encourage you and push you and lift you up and give you opportunities, and you take those opportunities, we're a pretty powerful group. And it's exciting to watch what those changes have led to. You know, in gravel cycling in particular, and the women's field has become something to be proud of. And it's just all those little nudges of us just kind of, it's not taking no for an answer. It's blazing our own trail. Like, no, we can do that. No, we can do that. You know, you're the only athlete that has won every single distance at Unbound, and came with that XL initial class, you know, to win that. So you've literally won the 100, the 200, and the XL. You need to come back and do the 50 now that it's a race.
Maybe a race this year. 50. That's gonna be too short for you.
But it's just really cool to just look back over the last, 15, 20 years, and see the fact that, wow, this is insane. The impact that we've been able to have, not just on each other, but just in women getting on bikes and, getting to know Catherine and watching what Girls Gone Gravel has been able to do. And it's just all a result of like women not taking, I don't want to say that no for an answer. It's just deciding that we don't need anybody's permission. We've got each other to get it done. So
I think we don't need anybody's permission, but I'll tell you, it's pretty exhausting to try to trail alone. It's really exhausting. And I've done that for a lot of my career. But we don't need to. The great thing about women is they're like, oh, well, I know somebody who can do a website, or I know somebody who can do that. I mean, as scared as you were to go to Laos with me, that's as scared as I was to launch the Be Good Foundation. And you were like, no, you can do this here. Okay. And we'll build this business plan. And, so I think women, we don't take no for an answer, but often it feels like, well, but I don't have the answer and I don't know where to find it.
Yeah.
And women are so great about opening. We're community beings. We're sort of communal beings. And I think a lesson that's been good for me to learn as I mature in my athletic career, this has happened, and in my entrepreneurial career, is that we're not competing against each other.
No,
we are not. And I've competed against people at other parts of my career and early on in my sports career. And then I started to realize, you know what, if I'm prepared and I'm ready and someone else is actually better than me, like, that's okay. Like, they can lift me up and I can still be proud of my performance and how I'm doing, and that there is room for all of us there. And so that's been a really great sort of maturing. And people know me, don't get me wrong, I'm competitive. 100%, but competitive with myself and how well I can do versus being better than somebody else. The measure isn't somebody else. And, that's for women who go to events all the time. Like, well, I don't want to be last. I don't race. I don't even want to be timed. Don't even time me. And at RPI, I'm like, well, we have to time you because it's the only way we actually know if you come back because it's so remote. There's no cell coverage. Like, the timer is your safety mechanism. But often, race is a 4-letter word for people. And really, you're not competing against anyone but yourself. And I always tell people, when you get in a group of people, there's an energy that lifts you up that you don't have on your own. Mm-hmm. You experience it in a group ride, you experience it at the start of a race where there's an energy, and it's an energy that's lifting you instead of an energy that's trying to like squelch you down. And I really love that about gravel. Yeah, one person crosses the finish line first, but everyone can win. It's what is your definition of winning, of completing, competing? You want to try to be first. That's great. Those are all super valid, but not everyone's trying to like push you in the gutter and like squelch you and like get you out of the way. Most people are actually pretty stoked to see large crowds and especially large groups of women. And I think it's so important when people sign up for events that they come in with that attitude of excitement versus fear or, overly competitive. And I'll stop talking in a second, but our emotion of fear, in neuroscience, the neurochemistry that goes on in your brain between anxiety and excitement, it's the same. It's the same neurochemicals, it's the same process happening in your body. The only difference is how you frame it. And so excitement, you're like, yeah, it makes your heart is racing. It's the same thing of you being like, oh, I'm anxious. And the only difference is what you're telling yourself in your head. And so I think that's an important thing to remember on the start line, or when you're signing up for something, or you're going to go to Laos with Rebecca Rush, or you're going to start a business. Excitement's actually, if you feel that, you're like, oh good, I'm excited, instead of, oh God, I'm anxious.
I was both. Which is okay.
It's framing,
But yeah, for sure. No, you're right.
I think about 12 years ago, I did an Ironman, and One of the things I regret from like that first season of training is I trained so much out of fear, like, what if I don't finish? What if I don't finish? And when I shifted that and I had confidence, I was like, I'm going to finish this thing. It just changed the way I approached training, right? It was like a subtle shift because I still didn't know if I was going to finish. I'd never done one before, but I was like, I'm going to finish this. Like, I'm going to do it. I had way more fun coming from that state of mind and just like, let's see what I can do today. You know, like I would always like play this game with my coach, like, oh, do you think you can make it hard enough for me? You know, in my mind where I was like, I'm dying. But you know, like those, like it just shifts your perspective so much. And I think that's so important as women is like just having that confidence when you go into something.
Yeah, and that's why going back, trying something for the first time. I mean, I know you have a pretty big group coming to Private Idaho of Girls Gone Gravel. That's exciting.
Yeah, we have a pretty big group, and we'll talk about this a little bit more from on the intro, but we and we'll put it out in a social media post, but we are not doing a gravel festival this coming year. There's just things that we couldn't swing
Line
it with
up.
everything else going on in Feisty. But we did want to have a place for the community together. And so when a group started talking about Rebecca's Pride of Idaho, I was like, well, this just makes sense. Like if people want to come do an event, everything I see is like it's a great party anyway. So we're just going to join the party. So anybody is invited to come join us up in Ketchum this summer. Maybe you could share a few of the highlights about the race, Rebecca, if people haven't seen it. There's a lot on social media that they can find, but
That's a great, and I love, yeah, if someone, why do your own gravel festival when there's
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 already one.
gravel festivals happening already, you know? And that's another thing I'm learning as I, you know, as I get more experience, is collaboration is pretty key. And then we don't have to all work as hard if we're, so I love that you're bringing the gravel festival folks our way. And Private Idaho, you know, I named it that because when I was out scouting for courses, I was just like, I saw no one. I saw no one, just me. On my motorcycle, you know, going around trying to put courses together, and I saw antelope and, you know, but no people. And I was just like, wow, this is really unique. And that is one of the most unique aspects of the course, is the remoteness. And, you know, where we go on course is on the long day on Sunday, it looks the same as it would have 100 years ago. There's no cell phone coverage, there's no homes, there's a few ranches, you know, and wildlife and mountains, and it's untouched and so pristine and beautiful. And that's pretty rare, you know, to be able to, you know, really unplug. There's no cell phone coverage once you leave the course, which I love. You really unplug and really get a chance to connect with nature and just the riders around you. And it's a really solitary experience. And yes, there's 1,500 people who start, but every year, even when I've grown it, I've added a couple more hundred people, a couple more hundred people. I go out on course and ride and make sure that people still have that pristine experience. And you do, you'll be out there with like 5 or 10 people or 2 people, and you're like, where is everyone? I thought there were 1,500 people. But I really want people to be able to have that really small group, solitary experience on the course, but then come back to like the big festival party and everybody's there. So it's really, to me, the best of both worlds of like community gathering, but then also kind of a vision quest, you know, really remote experience where you're just like, I can't believe the scenery I'm seeing. It gets me every time. It like brings me to tears. It's so beautiful out there. And so that's the really what sets it apart. You know, it's this really small town hospitality, and really remote. And I launched it with people, purpose, place is how why I launched it. And we talked about the place. I also we talked about the people. I launched a gravel event because more people could come. And we've launched more distances, everything from a stage race to a 20 miler, so that everyone has something to try. And then purpose is the third P, and that's we've always been a fundraising ride, and especially for the Be Good Foundation, which is my foundation that Christy helped launch, and was basically after I went and rode the Ho Chi Minh Trail, the most important ride of my life, went to connect with my father in the place where he died in the Vietnam War. I came back feeling distinctly hearing his words, "Be good," is how he signed all his letters home. But hearing his words that all my wins, all my podiums, all my everything I've done was just a launch pad to do more with bikes, and that I could take what I know and my experience and my exposure and help other people. And really building community through bike is the bottom line of what Be Good does. And so whether, our founding story is clearing bombs along the trail where my dad, was dropping bombs during the Vietnam War, that still unexploded ordnance is still there. I learned of that and was just like, okay, I can do more with my career. And that has been a really awesome phase of everything that I do now is tied into the Be Good mission. And whether that's, local trail building or bikes in Africa or, scholarships for people who are trying to do bike adventures or get, more women and BIPOC and underserved communities to bike events. So we do a lot of stuff like that with Be Good. And Private Idaho is our number one fundraiser
Sure.
for the year for the Be Good Foundation. So we always have a big party and we've got a lot of groups that come. And so there's always an aspect. We're launching this year fundraising campaign so people can join like a pros team, like if you want to be on Ted King's fundraising team for Be Good. And so that's another way to build community because people love to ride their bikes, but people also really love to bond with each other over bikes and to invite more people to ride bikes. And so it's kind of this nice, beautiful circle.
I love that. Maybe we need a female pro that we can do a Girls Gone Gravel
We
team
do.
with.
And actually, we're in search. I'll put that out there. We're in search of people who want to lead fundraising teams, who want to be sort of the team captain. We set up all the fundraising. You don't really have to do anything except ride your bike and tell your friends about it. So yeah, I'll put the call out right
I see
now
Christy. I see Christy's wheels spinning.
for and they don't have to be pros. It can be whoever, but somebody who wants to lead a fundraising team, we're setting those up right now so they can just reach out to me directly or through Girls Gone Gravel.
I love that.
And it's
Yeah.
my hometown. So, and I will also say there are very few big, large cycling events that are founded by a female. I'm just going to give some props now. Founded by a professional athlete female, we're still doing that. I'm still riding with everyone and I will ride with everyone. And so it is very personal. It has my name on it, and my goal has always been that you feel like a local when you come visit and ride with me. So that's an
Yes.
invitation.
It's
Love
definitely a
that.
make of this year vacation kind of trip.
I love it. It's a long way to go, and I will say to that to people, we're remote, and so it's hard to get here, which is a blessing and a curse. But so if you're gonna come, don't try to cram it into like 2 days. Take the time, spend a little time, because everything I hear for people who've come for the first time, like, oh, I wish I'd stayed longer, or
Yeah.
oh, I wish I'd
No,
come.
100%. Ketchum, that area is not a place to see on just a weekend.
You don't
It
want to
just,
rush through. Yeah.
no,
Yeah.
you
I'll be
don't.
there a week
There's
if
just,
anybody wants to come hang out.
there's too much cool stuff to do. I
Well,
mean,
that's
like,
why I launched the stage race, quite honestly, is because
yeah.
people are like, where else can we ride? What else can we do? And so yeah, make it a week if you can. It's definitely worth there's a lot to explore. And you
Yeah.
might get to do like a flash mob ride with me or something.
I love it. We're all in. I did also want to ask you, so I know you have been chatting a little bit with Feisty, with our team, about a project because you had kind of a life-changing event. Was it a year ago, 2 years ago now, where you had
2 years and 2 months ago.
not that you're counting, but on the Arizona Trail, I believe you fell, hit your head, and had a concussion. And that's been pretty, from what I understand from my sources, Celine Yeager, pretty life-changing. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that because I think we're starting to learn so much about women and concussions and how little we knew about concussions overall, but especially about women.
Yeah, and Celine's the co-author of my book. We've been friends and teammates and ride partners a long time, so she's amazing. And the opportunity to potentially work with her again is super exciting, and hopefully with Feisty. So yeah, November 11th, 2 years ago, that would have been what, 2021. I was riding a bikepacking route by myself, on a really easy section of trail in Arizona. And I just clipped a handlebar on a rock. Like, I was singing, I was having a great day. It was like sunny afternoon. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. It was probably going, I don't know, 50 pretty fast, 15 miles an hour along this like cool trail. And I just clipped a handlebar. And that sent me flying down kind of a 10-foot, about a 10-foot rocky embankment, flung me off my bike. The bike stayed on the trail. My body bounced on my head, bounced on my back, rolled a few more times, and ended up kind of in this ditch. And I didn't lose consciousness, but I cracked my helmet, and I was alone, and there was in a place with no cell phone coverage. So I basically had to do a self extrication. And I'm an EMT, so I was going through, I actually took a selfie. I was looking at my phone to like check my pupils, and I was like checking my respirations, and I was running my GoPro camera and just like, oh, I'm going into shock. Oh, okay. Like, if I'm going into shock and I'm aware that I'm going into shock, am I really going into shock? And so it took me a couple hours to extricate myself, and get out to a trailhead where I could call somebody. And I did film the whole time and talk to my camera because I was basically like trying to save my life. You know, I didn't know if I knew I had broken or ribs, and I'm like, well, that could be punctured lung, and you know, I hit my head, that could be brain swelling, and my pupils are really super dilated, and so it was pretty scary. But by all sort of definitions of it, it was a mild concussion. You know, I didn't lose consciousness, I didn't have a brain bleed or anything else like that. But I spent the last 2 years with really some long-term post-concussive symptoms that were, I wasn't really getting help for. You know, even from, you know, high performance sponsors were like, oh, well, we're working on a concussion protocol. And so even the access that I have to some pretty high-level professionals, nobody was really giving me any good help or care, saying, oh, just wait, oh, just stay off screens a little bit, you know. And I was doing those things, but really untargeted care. And I was one of those people. Not everyone has, you know, not everyone has long-term symptoms. I was one of those people who did, and spent really the last 2 years really suffering and in a really dark place. And, you know, it was pretty bad. But I'm happy to say I'm sort of getting out of the weeds, and I've learned a lot, as we do through trauma or any hard experience, or when you fall off your bike, you learn what you did wrong and you get up and you do it again. And I've learned a lot about what's wrong with, one, how prevalent concussions are and people hitting their head, traumatic brain injury, and you don't have to lose consciousness to have a brain injury. It's a bruise, you know? So I've learned a lot about it, how common it is, and how, poor the care is for athletes, general people. We think that if you're not a football player, and I basically was told, oh, well, you're not on the ski team, so we can't do that testing for you. I'm like, well, why not? I have a brain, I have a head. Like, what does it matter? And so I've learned a lot about how to advocate for myself, which is really hard. When you have a brain injury, you can't research and Google online and look up all this stuff. And so I'll sort of cut to the chase, but what I want to take from this experience is, and that what I want to work with Celine on, is providing better resources for people. Use my story of the ups and downs and the try this, try that, try that, and really pull from some of the research, which is where Celine is great, and get it into a compiled place for people, because there is research out there. A lot of it's with the NFL, the, you know, hockey, it's not with women.
Yeah.
There is a lot of research that's available. It just isn't in a good place, and it isn't formulated for women especially, because what Celine's teaching me, has taught me, is that women's brains respond to injury differently than men. just like any other part of our body might respond differently to an injury. And so my goal, we've developed a podcast series, eventually want to do more with it, but really to use my story to provide resources for people to take care of their cognitive health, whether you've hit your head before or you might in the future, because it's really, really common. And actually cycling is the number one, right up there with people hitting their heads. It's not football. It's not skiing. It's not these high impact sports where they're racing for people to hit their heads. They've got better helmets. They've got, and we have great helmets, but it's sort of the average person that falls and bonks their head.
Yeah.
It's more common than a professional athlete who's in a high impact sport. It's actually more common for a regular person.
And we learned you don't even have to actually hit your head. It can just be if you jerk really hard, it can jerk your brain.
Yeah. So
in your head, which is really interesting too.
It's like shaken baby syndrome. Yeah. It's like your brain is floating around in your skull. And so any sort of jarring impact, you don't even have to break your helmet. You don't even have to necessarily hit it. Often people think if they hit their face, that's not their brain and their head, but it really is, your skull. Yeah. And so, cognitive health and concussion recovery is a big area where I want to put some focus in to help people.
It's very much needed. And I've known other female athletes that have had trouble getting help because they're like, when they go to their doctor and they're like, well, I just can't train or I can't do this. And they're like, well, just rest. And they're like,
Or
but
suck
you don't
it up.
Understand.
Well, I'll tell you, the worst advice I got was basically to rest. And quite frankly, the lack of movement for the first time in my life, I basically became a total couch potato for almost a year. And that was the worst thing I could have done because it changes everything in your body. And I started getting back pain and knee pain and hormonal changes and mood changes. And quite honestly, getting back moving was the best medicine I could have gotten, that and a few other protocols to support the nervous system, but being told not to move is actually really the opposite. Because movement is medicine. And so, that'll be a next big phase of hopefully communication. And again, using my experience to help other people. But thanks for asking. It was a hard couple of years. And honestly, a lot of people, especially pros, they don't want to talk about, the elephant in the room or that they hit their head because they're trying to compete, they're trying to keep their job.
Yeah.
And even you don't have to be a professional athlete. People are just trying to keep their jobs. And if you say, oh, my brain's not working well, no matter what job you have, there's a real risk that, so there's a lot of other factors as to why people don't report or get good care and they can't get it. And they're not asking the right questions because they just don't know what to ask. And so I also want to normalize that, hey, it's an injury. It's a brain injury. It's an injury like anything else that we can heal from, but we just need a protocol, just as if you sprained your ankle or broke your leg or whatever else.
Yeah.
So funny to think that we don't have that.
We don't have it.
I mean, I know, but it's like, how do we not have that? It's your freaking brain. Like it literally does everything for you. Like it does everything for you. So I know this is, you were talking about the NFL and I was watching Kansas City Chiefs play last night, go Chiefs, but at the same time, I have the hardest time watching football.
Yeah.
Because it just looks like such an incredibly bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, we're literally paying men to go out and hit their heads on each other.
It's really hard.
Which is just really odd. And I mean, I had a friend, when I ever bring any new women into cycling and some of them, I don't think the helmet thing is much of a thing as it used to be, but just wearing a helmet is so important. I mean, it's not the only thing, but it's so preventative. And I had a friend that was just like, I just don't want to wear a helmet. And I was like, when you're riding with me, you have to wear a helmet. Like I can't even imagine going on a ride with you without a helmet. And she went on a ride around the block without a helmet, was turning into her driveway. The wheels went out from underneath her and she hit her head on the curb and was in the hospital for 5 days with a brain injury. Like, I'm like, this is, I mean, she probably would have still had some concussion and some brain injury from that with the helmet, but like, just what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, that's, it's just, to me, you got to protect your head. You got to protect your head. But
Yeah, I mean, remember when we got into cars and didn't want to put a seatbelt on and it
yeah.
was like, oh, we got to put a seatbelt on, really? And now you wouldn't even think of it. It's just this automatic thing. And
Yeah.
so, yeah, hopefully that education is happening that, yeah, that helmet is very protective. And
Yep.
the technology in helmets are amazing right now. They've come a long way. And so, yeah, we got to wear helmets when
Yeah.
we ride bikes.
Well, this has been such a fun conversation. I think I have one more question. I don't know if Christy has any, but I'm curious because of the long span of your career going from adventure racing into cycling and just all the things you've gotten to do and be a forerunner in is like when you look at the landscape of women's cycling right now, obviously it's a very exciting time. What's your hope for the future in women's cycling?
I'm pretty excited about a lot of things. Like World Cup mountain biking is way more exciting watching the women's races than the men's, and they're seeing that in viewership. The gravel elite fields are really amazing with a really diverse, more diverse group of women. It's not all pro roadies. They're coming in from lots of different places. So I'm excited to see more women on the playing field. That has changed a lot in many sports. What there's still some places to go, and what I hope for is that, there are very few women in executive positions in the cycling industry. There's very few women event directors. There's very few women. I'm one of the few women who was like, oh, you're still, in the sports industry. So I hope to actually change that landscape because there's a lot of women participating and I want them to step up and take leadership roles.
Yeah.
And that goes back to what Christy said is like, forget the imposter syndrome or feeling like you're not prepared enough. And I'll go back to that mountain biking story. I started professional mountain biking when I couldn't really mountain bike. Okay. So that means women, we always want to be ready. Oh, I need more training. I need more this. I need more that. And so I would do a call out to encourage women to start groups like Girls Gone Gravel, start, apply for that position and normalize that we want to see more women in all aspects of cycling, not just on the start lines. And I'd love for us to stop saying, and I appreciate you, Christy, I think you said this, that you didn't say I'm the only female to have won every, distance of Unbound. You said I'm the only athlete to have won all disciplines of Unbound. And I really want to take that sort of descriptor away, like, oh, you're good for a female athlete, or she's a great female athlete. She's a great female entrepreneur. She's a great female. I mean, it's great to note that we are female because we are, but I'm just a great athlete. I'm just a great business owner. I run a foundation, regardless of gender. So I would love a time when that descriptor doesn't really need to be there.
Yeah. Amen. I can't really follow up that question, so good job, Catherine.
I'll follow up with a question and an invitation. I know Catherine's coming to Private Idaho, and Christy, I'd love to ride with you again. So hopefully that's in the
Yeah.
future.
And we just need to get Celine there. The
Yeah.
party.
Oh
Yes.
my God. That'd
The
be really
party's all
fun.
there. She's thinking about it. She's considering it. It
She's
would be a
considering, and we will all be at Sea Otter, and Celine and I are talking about with Feisty actually doing a whole panel on traumatic brain injury at Sea Otter. So I'm
I love
really hoping.
it. We know a few other female cyclists that have had some.
Yeah, we know a few.
Cool. Well, I will put in the show notes, we have a discount code. Rebecca's team has been very generous. They're giving anybody that wants to come out 20% off. And we may even get like a private course preview webinar with Rebecca as we lead into things. And then we'll be having a big party out in Ketchum for
Can I
about a
chef
week.
it up
So,
for something?
huh?
Can I chef it up for something?
Can you do what?
Chef it up,
Oh,
cook.
chef.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to cook for me, I'll let you do that anytime. You can send me meals right now.
Oh, I have an idea. So there's a culinary institute at in Ketchum, right on Main Street, Christy. It's this cool old historic building, and
Okay.
they host events where you it's a culinary institute. So you can use their kitchen, you can, and it's a, like a party place. I think that could be the Girls Gone Gravel
I
party.
kind of
We could
like
do
this
that. We
idea.
could do a dinner there as a fundraiser for the Be Good, a
I
Girls Gone
like this
Gravel,
idea.
for the Be Good
I like it.
Foundation.
That would be good.
That would be good.
Be really good.
So we're
Be
gonna have a
really
great
good.
time out there. So I hope that people will join us, and if not, check it out. Make it a bucket list event. Check out the Be Good Foundation, and be on the lookout for more information coming about concussions soon.
Yes, and riding bikes, getting more people on bikes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Rebecca.
That was a blast. We'll meet next time on two wheels.
Perfect. You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.